ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another FlyAnglersOnline.com podcast. Once again, I'm your host, Dr. Hugo Gibson. Now, I don't know about you guys, but this time of the year, I've got the fishing bug pretty bad. I have been surfing the internet, checking out all kinds of fly fishing videos on YouTube, and a lot of them have been movie trailers, movies like Drift, Rise, Once in a Blue Moon, all these places that I may never get to fish, but then again, I may. I started thinking, you know, what does it take to put together a trip like this? And I thought, well, the only person I know who has done any significant amount of adventure travel is my friend Charlie Reading. He's the owner of Reading's Fly Shop, just outside of Lebanon, Missouri, near Bennett Springs State Park. And he's also a world-renowned rod builder, and has done a tremendous amount of adventure travel in relation to fly fishing. So I thought I'd give Charlie a call and pick his brain a little bit and see just what it would take, especially in today's economy, to put together what some people would term a once-in-a-lifetime trip. Interesting to hear Charlie's response to that statement. So ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome Charlie Reading.
Hi, Charlie. How are you doing this evening?
Oh, I'm fine. Fine.
Good. We're covering a lot of different aspects on Fly Anglers Online, and since you've done so much traveling, fly fishing traveling, I thought it might be interesting to pick your brain and just kind of get an idea of what it takes to plan a trip like that. And maybe you can tell us a story or two about some of the trips that you've been on.
Okay, sure. Well, it's like most people that have an interest in fishing, I guess it's a matter of what you want to catch. First things first, I have a wide diversity of what I like to do with the fly rod. I don't categorize any one fish as being a focal point. So in my fly fishing, it's in what has prompted my interest to go places. Number one, I like to travel. And number two, I like a variety of fly fishing, warm water, cold water, salt water, fresh water, lakes, streams. Mainly, I like moving water. So I have a tendency to prefer rivers and creeks and stuff. And as far as the fishing I pursue and how I find out about it, it's probably like anything else. I mean, I carry a very extensive line of books. Of course, I read all the time. And like everybody else, you get started fly fishing. Depends on what your regional area promoted. Mine happened to have been a trout area. And getting involved in fly fishing, it just seemed that fly fishing for trout had the greatest diversity of ways of enjoying more than just fishing. So as a result, my interest in trout fishing started to peak. My interest was definitely spurred on by having friends introduce me and the fact that there was more to fly fish than catching fish. And it just seemed to be that trout fishing all over the world, I started reading it and getting pretty involved in it and found out that, my gosh, you can catch trout all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I like to travel, kind of like different parts of the world. So most all the beautiful places you go, trout's there, you know.
Yeah.
Take what we did here and what the British did and the rainbows and the browns and some of the unique fish that you get, kind of wild native fish like marble trout in east of Italy and Slovenia and places like that, and all the different particular species of trout. So that's kind of the interest. And so I pursue the unusual or the really classic, really beautiful places like New Zealand and interesting odd places that you always heard of a Tasmanian devil and thought, is there a place called Tasmania? Well, yeah, there is. It's a pretty neat fishery down there. So that's kind of how I got involved in the fly fishing for trout. The saltwater followed pretty quick in my fishing career, and one of the first places I ran into for a good experience of saltwater fishing was Christmas Island back in the mid-80s.
Nice.
It was actually quite a magical place. And so from that, you get into other fish. So it just keeps growing and evolving. And I'm looking at unusual and different things, you know. Haven't been to Africa yet for tiger trout. I want to do that. Looking at going to Bolivia or Argentina for a golden dorado, the peacocks in the Amazon. I've done those things. One very unique, probably not a safe place to go is New Guinea black bass in New Guinea.
Mm-hmm.
Did that several years ago. That was quite interesting and unique. So
well,
the gamut all over the world.
I've had the privilege of fishing a lot of different places, and it's, you know, it's like you said, it is way more than just the fishing. It's if you can immerse yourself in the entire experience, I think you come away.
Well, it's the people,
yeah.
It's the Lanark and a few other fish in northern China up in Mongolia, but I haven't done the taming yet, but I want to do that. Did some fishing in Kamchatka, Saponifer for rainbows. Unbelievable rainbow river. It's fantastic.
That would be something. I've looked at that a couple times and thought, oh, man.
Well, those are kind of native haunts for fish, and I've always kind of figured that if you introduce the fish there, no matter if it's 100, 150 years ago, as much as I love New Zealand, it's one of my favorite places to fly fish. We took the trip down there, and they were native, but boy, if there was ever a country that had an introduced species that really actually added a unique flavor for the sportsman, I think New Zealand ranks right up on top of the list. I can't believe this incredibly beautiful place wouldn't have trout there. They're not native, and between what we did with our rainbows through the back door and got them in there, between the brown trout program, it has just been a marriage of fish and a beautiful countryside that it just seems like it would be an incredible waste to nature that those particular fish weren't introduced to the both islands of New Zealand, and it has been a great marriage. It's a non-native species introduced into it, and I guess from an ecological standpoint, it probably crowded something out. Mm-hmm. But from a sportsman standpoint, and for reasons to go there and hike and climb and experience a beautiful, beautiful part of the world and then be able to catch trout while you're there, it's kind of hard to improve on that. To me, that's just a beautiful place. The people in New Zealand are very friendly. I love New Zealand. I like the people. I like the country. I like the rural nature of it. It's a beautiful place to fish. It's not for everybody. It's somewhat challenging and somewhat different than some people promote. Mm-hmm. Not a lot of fish, and sometimes there are. So New Zealand's for the guy that really wants to have kind of a challenge on, it's more kind of a sight fishing environment. You can not sight fish, but New Zealand is a hunting and fishing experience, and for those people that like that, New Zealand can be a great place to fish.
Now, when you start planning for a trip like that, what are some of the first steps that you take? What do you look for? Do you just hear about it and then think, oh, okay, I'm going to do this?
And what makes it so much easier today is the fact that there's so much information out there. First of all, it's a matter of the time you can get away and the compatibility. And, of course, we're in the Northern Hemisphere. The thing that makes it attractive, and when you plan for a trip, you kind of work it around your schedule in a fly shop. So when you go to the Southern Hemisphere, it's summer down there and winter up here. Mm-hmm. That's one of the criteria that makes for an interesting way to plan a trip is when you can go and when in the fly shop when your business is slower. The other criteria, and how do you find out about it, is there's so much information out there and the travel agencies that are very good at this. In fact, I highly recommend them, and I work with three or four different ones. And that's what these people do, and they have. Sometimes I think people look at these trips and say, well, you know, I'm just going to hoof this and do it on my own. Well, that's okay, but understand that's their area of expertise, and they've got something at stake at this. In lots of cases, not only do you get a better feedback and a better way to plan the success of your trip because they've got all that information and the lodge has all that information, and some people take these trips and try to basically do it on their own. And that's okay if you want to do that. I forewarn people that have and want to have a fairly successful trip, depending on where you go, be a little careful about that. Sometimes saving a few hundred dollars was the worst few hundred dollars you ever saved.
Right.
So it's not a very good savings when you go to a particular place at the wrong time and pick a string just because you think you get there, that the streets are paved with gold. Well, a lot of people come to America realize it wasn't. They weren't paved with gold. Mm-hmm. A lot of adversity when they came over. I think a lot of places you read about, wishful thinking doesn't make it good. And when you have a travel agency, and most of them, and I work with three or four of them, there's all your information right there in front of you. Find one that works with you. A lot of them just don't take a solid week. I've got a trip to go down to the bay over from Ascension Bay. I fished that several times. Great place to go, and I'm working with it. Flywater Travel, I've worked with Frontiers, I've worked with several others. And that's a good place to start. First thing you got to do is realize, okay, what do you want to fish for? What are you comfortable with? I actually think that in lots of cases when you take your first trip, maybe a smart thing to do is pursue a fish you already know and understand. Like if you take a really nice kind of one of these trips, you call them, I think the most depressing thing you can say is it's once-in-a-lifetime trip. I mean, it's an old saying, and I find that extremely depressing. Because if you actually really did this once-in-a-lifetime trip, you took it once in your lifetime, you can't take it again. That's very depressing. I know what they mean by it. I always found it quite humorous and also very very depressing that I take this trip, and it's one of the most incredible experiences of my life and my the travel agencies really help you out because they give you this track record. They tell you the places you ought to go, and I'm picking on New Zealand, but you go there and you go at the wrong time, or pick, you think you're going to do it on your own, save a few bucks, and you pick these streams out and you go there, and there's no fish there. Mm-hmm. Or you go there and you fish the method you think you're going to pose, and you're pretty sure you're a good trout fisherman. You get over there and you realize it wasn't that good after all. Why? Mm-hmm. Because there weren't a lot of fish, and you spooked a lot of them. And the same is true in saltwater fishing. In saltwater fishing, the first transition you make is be sure that when you go to places like that, you pick the right time. Don't get in over your head. You know, in other words, you know, trying to catch big, I said, I'm going to go saltwater fishing. The first thing I want to do is I want to go after a permit. Mm-hmm. Oh, great, that sounds fantastic. Pretty interesting fish. I think the fish got a lot of baggage associated with it. I think it's one of those things that you stick a feather in half and say, well, I caught a permit. Well, that's great, but I would say let's fill in a few bonefish and maybe some jacks and some snook and maybe some tarpon. So some of the water fish and trips sometimes are a little bit eye-revealing. When you think you're a pretty good caster and you get out and there's a 25-mile-an-hour wind blowing in your face and the guides pulled you out there and said, okay, there at 12 or 1 o'clock, and you can't cast. Make a trip that you can handle the conditions under, yeah. And then think for the worst and prepare for the most challenging.
Yep.
The biggest mistake I think people make, and it's really hot, it's very, you know, like, is when you go saltwater fishing and you've done a lot of freshwater fishing in your life. Don't underline your fish. Don't make the mistake of going out and says, well, I got this guy, says he bones fishing, he fishes with a six-weight rod. I don't care if he uses a six-weight rod. Personally, for bone fishing, I'm going to be serious, and I'm taking my first trip, I'm not going to have anything under an eight-weight. Mm-hmm. Now, are there people that might differ with that? Of course they do. That's why we've got all these fly rods out there. But I personally wouldn't recommend somebody go bone fish with a five- or six-weight rod. Could you catch fish with that? Of course you can. I've caught them with two-weights.
Yeah.
That's not a very responsible piece of advice to give somebody because you need that weight of that rod or that line to be able to get it out there. So that's a big part of planning your trip. Pick the fish you're comfortable with or go with somebody that can help you. Boy, there's nothing much better than that. Doing things solo, this is why I think it's really important to have the advice and consent. And you know what? These travel agencies are extremely responsible for their advice. They want you to have a good time. They're on your side.
Yeah.
They want you to go back. Saving a few bucks by trying to do something on your own might not have been such a good thing to do. So it's really a matter of picking what you want to fish for. And so how I plan my trips, of course, I'm in the business. I've been fly fishing in the fly fishing business for almost 32 years. I now look for the unusual and the different and the filling out the resume of trying different places to fish. I haven't figured out what I can catch in Alaska. That's the only con that I haven't fly fished on yet. I can't figure out what I can catch on a fly rod, if I can say that. Then I don't know if there's too many people say I've caught a fish on a fly rod in seven of the seven continents on the globe.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what I'm going to catch in the Antarctic, so I can't say that I've caught them on six, but I haven't caught them on seven. Fly fishing is really an experience of getting to know the world and the people of geographic areas, and let's just get this out of the way real fast. I'm incredibly biased and prejudiced. There's nothing that beats fly fishing. Tongue-in-cheek, I'm saying that. Nothing beats fly fishing, and nothing gives you the ability of going around the world and enjoying the floral, the fauna, the geography, the people, the terrain, the mountains, the streams, the rivers. It is absolutely without equal. If somebody can come up with a good rebuttal, I'll take my hat off to them. I'm not wearing one right now. I don't think you can beat fly fishing if you embrace all the things associated with it.
I would have to agree with you.
It has no equal.
Yeah.
And you always have this decision to make, do I let it go or do I kill it? Kind of hard to do that with a 10-point, 12-point, 14-point buck. Hunting is a blood sport. Nothing against it. I don't have time to hunt, but I hunt with my fly rod, but I don't have to kill my fish to enjoy it. Right. But you got to have it in your hands before you can say it's yours. These long-handled releases don't count. You got to have the choice that it's yours or you're going to let it go. Me, you got to complete the act of angling.
Yeah.
This guy that hooks a fish and he's 20 feet away and he says, well, I released the fish. You didn't have that option because you didn't land it. People play funny things in games, and I think fly fishermen are none different.
Yep, I would agree.
We have a tendency to play these little games, and if that that's what you enjoy doing, fine, but please do yourself a favor. When you're communicating your success, your fishing, do yourself a favor. At least be honest about what you did.
Yeah.
You'll find it's actually more therapeutic to tell the truth about what you did and didn't do. And then one other thing, I think it's extremely important in fly fishing because we have so many good, kind, generous, knowledgeable people. Let's just do one thing. Let's give credit where credit is due. I really firmly believe in that. If somebody gave you an idea or concept, pass on that person's generosity. That's a small price to pay for somebody that helps you with your enjoyment of fly fishing.
Yep.
I think fly fishing has one universal thing that makes it so fantastic. I have learned so much from so many people and given away, given credit to those people, and I just seem to get more back by giving credit to those that deserve it, and trying to find a way of using it for my own self-gain and promotion.
Yeah. No, that is something that I have found universally. It doesn't matter where I fished. If it's fly fishing, there's always somebody who's willing to share what they know with you, and they don't ask anything in return.
In my shop, for gosh sakes, a guy in my shop, I was asking him for a couple of flies. I didn't have any. One of my customers comes in, opens up his box, and starts giving these two guys flies out of his box. I tried to compensate him by giving him a deal on some stuff he was buying. Let me take care of that. You're helping my customer. He said, no, I don't want anything. Then the guy's offering to pay for it. We said, no, I'm serious. I don't want anything for him.
Yeah.
I mean, that just makes you feel good that there are people out there like that. And we have a lot of those at fly fishing. We do. He just gave him a half a dozen or more flies out of his box in my shop.
Yeah.
And I thought, geez, what a generous thing to do. So I went over and found a couple of them he didn't have and gave him to him. And I wasn't doing it because I felt that I should have to do it. I just wanted to do it because I thought that was the only thing that was right to do. And you know what? If I hadn't done it, he would have probably felt better if I hadn't given him something. But we know each other quite well, and he helped my customers out. He had some flies I didn't have, and then he spent the time telling these guys what he had done, and he had a very good day of fishing, and most people down there haven't done very well at all because it's been kind of tough with the water's high.
Uh-huh.
So he gave these guys some flies and told them what to do and where he fished. Totally unselfish with what he did. He was getting ready to head on home. And if he had been down there fishing anyway, he'd have done it anyway. That's the kind of guy he was.
Yeah.
You know,
all the years that I've spent fishing down there, for those listening, we're talking about Bennett Springs State Park in South Central Missouri. I can't tell you all the times. I mean, I must have fished there for 5 years before I caught a fish. And the only reason I did is because of the generosity of an older guy. An old guy was standing there just pulling fish after fish after fish. And I said, what on earth are you using? I can't get something to bite if I threw money out there. And he showed me what to do, and he showed me the fly, and then gave me a couple of them, tied one on, and showed me how to fish it. That's fly fishing. That is one of the appeals, I think, to those of us who do it.
It's amazing when you don't keep track of who you help, how they come back to you several years later and then let you know what you did for them, and then you talk about making you feel pretty good, and actually quite small, you know.
Yeah.
A guy still remembers what I've done to him, gave to him, or did or helped you with, didn't think anything about it, just thought this is what you do.
Yeah.
Didn't ask for anything, didn't expect anything. 10, 15, 20 years later, the guy comes up and said, hey, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have learned to fly fish. And you're going like, well, that's a pretty humbling thing for a person to accept from another person because, my God, that's quite a compliment to be paid. And you kind of feel a little humbled by the fact that the guy remembered that and then acknowledged you helped him. You're going like, geez.
Yeah.
That's quite a generous thing to say.
Well,
so that's what's great about it. And what I like is I just there's some beautiful places in the world to fish. If you ever do start to travel and fish, you need to do yourself a favor. Never take it for granted. This is what I like to do. I go to a unique location, I'm there, I stand there, I look around, and I usually pinch myself and say, my God, this is sure a long ways from being a kid growing up on a farm in Missouri.
Yeah.
I have come full circle. I am doing what most people would love to do. Boy, am I a fortunate individual.
Yeah.
And I mean every bit of that. I love doing what I do. And I've been to some of the most beautiful places on the planet. And it's a very gratifying, very rewarding, humbling, incredibly exhilarating feeling to be in these places and then be there because you were motivated to want to go there because you love to fly fish. You know, it's pretty fulfilling. Kind of a multi-dimensional feeling kind of rushes into you all at once, and you see these beautiful places. And just, you don't have to kill these fish and have a good time with them, and at the same time, I mean, we're kind of playing with them. They're kind of taking this serious.
Yeah.
And that's why I think you should really fishermen, a lot of sportsmen really do help the environment, and we do put money into it, and we do respect and appreciate it. That's why when you're doing something like this, you do owe a gratitude and a debt to what nature's provided. You do need to respect it, and you need to be appreciative of what you're doing here. This is something we've got that's a little more complex than just catching something.
Right.
There's more going on here than that.
Right. Now,
I think it brings good people together, too.
Oh, absolutely. Now, before we get too far off track, you mentioned that you usually go with a travel agency, a fishing travel agency. What were some of the agencies that you use? If somebody's interested in doing it, can they?
Well, yeah, I am a booking agent for Flywater,
okay,
which I'm working with right now on another trip. I'm also a booking agent, and I work with Frontiers. They have great websites. They have a lot of information. They have a lot of literature on places you might want to preview before you go there.
Uh-huh.
Those are two I work with. Did a little work with anglers. But the two major ones that I have worked with the most in the past would be, and then one of my good friends, and they're just great people. If you go to New Zealand, and you got to get a hold of the people of Best in New Zealand, Mike McClellan and Connie back there. They have just bent over backwards to give me fantastic rates, good location. So when I go to New Zealand, I reserve that for Best of New Zealand, Mike McClellan. Connie saved us money and got us into great things. And we'll go so far as to meet me at the airport, which you didn't do that in L.A., just to let me know that my other customers, which I was in Paris and didn't know where they were, and she actually drove over. I mean, they were talking about going beyond the call of duty. So New Zealand, I go with the Best of New Zealand.
Okay.
The other two people I work with is Frontiers when I've gone to Christmas Island in Brazil and other places like that. And then the other one I work with is the one I'm working with quite a bit now. It's called Flywater. And they have places all over the world. And I've done some things with the people back at the Fly Shop because they pretty well know what's going on over in Russia, especially in Kamchatka. And I've worked with the Fly Shop when I go over to, when I went to Russia a couple times and fished the pond over there and did the float fishing. So those are the people I go with. Highly endorse them. They all have their unique areas and attributes. And so if you look them up, log on to them. They'll have all kinds of information that they will provide for you on their website and everything. And you can just kind of cruise through what you might want to do. And pretty hard to beat that. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to get a lot of information. And, of course, all the magazine articles you see out there. And there's a lot of books on travel, too. But a lot of times you'll get your first initial insight into destinations of fly fishing through various periodicals. You know, Fly Fishing Saltwater, Fly Tire, American Rod and Reel, Fly Fisherman. Sometimes people complain about those magazines that they're a little bit too exotic. Mm-hmm. I understand what they're saying. You know, but hey, we all got to dream about something, and you'll never go to these places unless somebody takes and writes an article and gives you information about them.
Absolutely, yep.
And some of them aren't as bad as you think they are. Some of these deals are pretty darn good.
Mm-hmm.
Travel right now is still fairly competitive. You can get some good airline rates, and you don't have to go for some of the places. They're still kind of expensive, and I'm not saying they're charging more than they should because it's an expensive place to go. You want to go to Alaska, fine, but my gosh, they've got a lot of expenses to cover.
Yeah.
And in recent years, especially last year, they've had some depressed economy has gave some really good rates in Alaska. And if you go to a lodge and you fly in there and they got to fly everything in there, then come on, they've got a lot of expenses they got to meet. That's why some of those lodgers are $6,000 and $7,000 and $8,000. And last year they had some fantastic prices just because they had to offer some good ones. Things were down last year. And some of your saltwater destinations are pretty reasonably priced, considering you go to Florida and what you have to pay for a guide and you still got to get your room and meals. Some of these saltwater destinations are very price competitive. So
that's good to know.
Don't just assume they're completely out of your budget.
Yeah.
Some of them are pretty doable. I go to New Zealand and I've got a super rate down there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going off season. The first part of November.
Yeah.
So just ask these agencies and they'll let you know and give you some rates on them. And sometimes you'll be surprised. Some of the rates are pretty competitive.
Now, if anybody had a question, would you mind them getting a hold of you?
Oh, I do that all the time, yeah.
Right.
I'm always booking trips for people. I've got some people who want to go back to the Aquaboa. Sometimes you can't get out over a year ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Most people have first right of refusal, so if people want to talk to me about a trip, they get out much more than a year ahead, then the group that's there for this year has a right to that spot again next year. So if people want to call me and ask me about trips and what about if I do this and this, and I can inform them on tackle and gear and equipment. I mean, I have a full-fledged fly shop here from 2-weight rods all the way up to 15 weights for blue water fly fishing.
Right.
So I cover all that. And biggest thing that most fly shops look at the trips is not so much the trip, it's the gear the person needs. So pretty well know how to fit you on various things for fly fishing and fresh head salt, mm-hmm. and then tell you places that you can go and the gear and equipment you need.
Okay.
In lots of cases, you might already have all the stuff you need.
Right,
you know,
right.
If you don't, then a lot of times you you might want to consider for saltwater a couple of different outfits. And most of your freshwater here in North America for trout works in New Zealand. You don't have to need anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Saltwater is typically flat saltwater fishing is typically, you know, 8s, 9s, and if you're into shallow water or tarpon, you might know 10s or whatever, but there's a lot of little variation there. But a good 8-weight rod is pretty hard to beat for flat fishing, for bonefish, and permit usually in deeper water you need about a 9 or maybe a 10.
Mm-hmm.
If you can throw a lead-eyed crab pattern 3-4 feet of water, you know.
Excellent.
Tarpon, kind of a powerful rod, it's not too soft. I like a bonefish rod that's not real quick and fast.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of misconceptions. You need a stiff rod to get into the wind. Catching the wind is, first things first is the casting, how you cast.
Mm-hmm.
I like a medium fast rod for saltwater bone fishing. Sometimes I think people feel that to cast in saltwater you need a stiff rod all the time. I'm not a big fan of that. I can cover that and be glad to cover and demonstrate a casting pond out front.
Mm-hmm.
I can demonstrate these principles, and sometimes underloaded stiff rods are not necessarily the answer to coping with tougher or unusual conditions you haven't fished under. So,
right.
And practice before you go.
Yeah.
Just assume that because you fly fish with 4s and 5s and 6s, that going out and being in a boat or weight fishing and casting into 15, 20 mile an hour winds with an 8-weight, it's going to be just to have your rod. Same thing. You better do a little practice in the wind.
Yeah.
Be prepared to be frustrated if you're not familiar with it.
Yeah, it's an interesting animal casting into a headwind like that.
Really, now, and you've
really
got a fish
is.
That's moving, and you've got to intercept the fish. So, being accurate, being able to cope with adverse conditions, and being relatively quick can take a 40-foot cast and one extra or two extra false casts. And if you don't hit the water, you have to go extra 2 or 3 false casts. The 40-foot cast now became a 60-foot cast.
Yeah.
Because learn to be accurate and quick and be able to hit a moving target with a little bit of like moving a shotgun through a bird.
Mm-hmm.
Understand moving targets in saltwater fishing. That's saying being able to place your fly out and lead the fish and crash them in the head and go put some wind conditions and know that you're going to have heavier rods. So
mm-hmm.
that's the difference in saltwater and freshwater.
Yeah.
And most people that haven't done it have quite an eye-opening experience when they first do it.
I would agree with that statement.
Yeah.
Anyway, what's your phone number?
It's 417-588-4334. That's my shop number here, and I'm usually in here most of the time from my time here in the central U.S. about 8:30 in the morning until about 7:30, 8 o'clock at night, and I'm open 7 days a week. My Sunday afternoons, I'm probably shut down a little earlier, but I'm in here basically 7 days a week, and I have a person that helps me out part-time. That's Roy.
Mm-hmm.
But if you ever decide to call me, you want to ask me some questions about different places to fish and tackling gear and equipment, that's kind of what I'm here for.
Well, yeah. Excellent. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Thank you.
Well,
ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening. I'm afraid we're about out of time for this week. Again, if you have any questions for Charlie in regards to taking a fly fishing trip, please don't hesitate to call him. He is a wealth of information and is going to be more than happy to entertain any questions that you guys may have about taking that dream trip. Stay tuned for our next podcast. This one's going to be called Ask the Expert, and there'll be details and information on FAOL. So keep an eye out for that post, and please send your responses in. Again, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Dr. Hugo Gibson, and until next time, tight lines.